Hello and welcome to the Car, Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, and my very special guest tonight is a man who actually works in Formula One. It is Will Daniels. Hello, Will. It's good to see you tonight.
Not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm very good. I've been so excited because I said in the advert yesterday, we finally hit the big time. And we've got somebody from Formula One. I feel like Danny DeVito, who's expecting $1 million to appear from somewhere. But we've got you on the show. And with all your experience of Formula One and sim racing, it's going to be a great show tonight. Now, for all our people who are watching on YouTube and who will be listening to this on our podcast as we put it out later on today, Will helps Josh Martin. He is the engineer for Josh Martin. And perhaps you might want to go into some of the things you've been helping Josh with as a sim engineer.
So recently we've been tackling the SRO Assetto Corsa Competition, I don't know how it's pronounced, events. So we've been doing the silver class, which is for the professional sim drivers to enter. And we've been doing a few more casual charity events in the Team Brits. And we've got a race department championship coming up. Or mainly all based with Josh around Assetto Corsa, the new one.
Mm-hmm. And how did you find him? How did you first meet Josh and start doing, kind of deciding to be his engineer?
I think I first met Josh 3 years ago when it was a friend I bumped into at karting, introduced me to the team run by the company he worked for. I met Josh through that. Originally driving for the team, and then I showed them that possibly my engineering talents were higher than my driving talents, not that that was a high bar to jump. And then I worked with Josh a few times. He was managing the team. He moved down to Derby, so he came within about a 30-minute radius of me. came all the way from Scotland. We've sort of had as sim racing's ebbed and flowed with the time we've had available, it's been on and off. And then when we got an extended summer break come up, I jumped on the opportunity to take more of a hands-on approach at engineering him. And we've been going from there, really.
Yeah. And of course, you work for Formula One. Now, I know our viewers will be wondering what team it is, but that will have to remain a mystery. And certainly for the moment, maybe if they've seen the ad, they might get an idea. But we're just not allowed to say. But certainly, what's it like to work in a proper, full-fledged Formula One team?
It's a surreal experience, especially at the start. You suddenly become very accustomed to it, and it's a strange feeling. You jump straight in. It's very fast-paced. Is a huge amount of talented guys and girls that work in the teams. Everyone tries to push their weight as best as they can. And it is one big team pushing towards results, and everyone's morale is affected by on-track performance, off-track stuff. You've got everyone reading the media all the time. So it really does, you live and breathe it. And there's definitely folk there that hugely into their Formula One and have been since birth, basically. You've got people there that have fallen into it through career paths. There's a wide range of backgrounds, and it's a fascinating place to work, basically. It's really, really, really fast-paced. There's no one likes to hang around for too long.
Yeah. Oh, now we've got one of my co-hosts, Andrew Marr, who normally does our show on a Thursday night. He's going to do it tomorrow night, and Ant as well, who's a regular viewer. He's saying in Derby, just up the road from his old hometown. He was on the 86. It's fascinating because I've been to a few factories, and they seem like the kind of place where everything's very plush. It's like a 5-star hotel, isn't it? You know, one of these, or even a 6-star hotel. Everything's done. You kind of feel that everyone has to work to 100%. You know, there's no room for any kind of, not there would be any slacking, but because everyone has so much responsibility, it must be quite, you know, you've done well for yourself to get into Formula One at such a young age. And I joke with it for the viewers who just joined us now. When I first heard Will do his engineering chat to Josh. And I thought, that sounds like Ross Brawn or someone, someone who'd been like a team manager or this very kind of, educated, experienced chap. And when I see, I thought, hey, it's a young man. You're just, barely out of school. So there we go. So you've done incredibly well to get to where you are today, and it must be incredible to experience Formula One and all that kind of covers. Have you ever had a chance to get to some of the Grand Prix, or what are the kind of advantages of working in Formula One?
I've never been to a Grand Prix while working in Formula One. I went to the Grand Prix directly before working in Formula One. That was a 21st birthday present, that one. So I've been to the British GP in 2010, where you could hear from our grandstand, which was the first year of the loop, Vettel getting the puncher round sort of turn 2-3, and the cheering going on, which is brilliant. good British atmosphere there. And then I've been to the most recent Hungary Grand Prix.
Last year
with the Verstappen-Hamilton battle.
That would have been that amazing.
We were at turn one grandstand. So we saw the moves for the lead. Sort of other standout things that I couldn't believe aren't caught in the coverage more is the racing that goes on in the mid to lower field, where you had Russell still trying to fight his way through in the Williams. You had there was a good battle going on between some McLarens that race. It's a shame some of that's not caught on TV so well, because they focus on the Hamilton Verstappen. But it was a fantastic race. We did 3 days.
Had a great atmosphere. I mean, it's quite funny because we are the kind of older style kind of, certainly Andrew, he'll be saying, what, old? But the two of us we're like two old men kind of complaining like the Muppets, the ones that are at the front of the ship saying how bad it is or whatever. But I mean, we love the old V8 sounds, and the V10s and all of that, and the V12s of the 90s. But to be fair, since they've brought in the V6s, and in the last 3 or 4 years and seasons, the racing's actually been pretty close. It's been quite rare. That it's been, you get a dull race. Maybe the French Grand Prix last year wasn't great, but most of the other races were amazing. And to give the drivers their due, they've put on a brilliant show for most of the time. And it's a pity for people like Russell, who's struggling at the back with the Williams. But I think this year, they're certainly from testing, they looked really quite good. And I think everyone is getting a bit closer because the regulations have been the same for quite a while. And now you, of course, work in the wind tunnel, so you're all in kind of aerodynamics. I mean, how has that moved on? Because that's something that is massively important to how a Formula One car works.
Oh, you've now got obviously the computer CFD side of it and the wind tunnel side of it. Being as young as I am, I think since I've really been into the technical side of it, CFD's been prevalent. And then wind tunnel testing, something I've sort of seen in university days. I've seen the tunnel I work in. I've been to a couple of others, but none quite on the same level. And it's come, there's a lot less. I think you could be a lot more creative, is my understanding from what people tell me, back in the 2000s, where you would get various different ideas come through. Whereas nowadays, with such a team of knowledge, the ideas, everything is engineered to the nth degree. So it's very, very precise environment. You're trying to keep everything as the same per test as possible. It's obviously, can't speak of what it was like 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20 years ago. But, what it is now is definitely on another level, especially when even compared to commercial grade wind tunnels. It's what we do is quite unique.
The technology and the money that goes behind it, it's almost like what they do to develop a plane, isn't it? It's such an incredible amount of money spent to make sure that it's up to date. And that's why they were saying, the Force India team? Well, it used to be the Force India team. Yeah. I think they didn't have a wind tunnel for a while and they were really struggling. And then when they got their new one or got access to one, they improved dramatically because it was up to date and it really got them going. I remember the first time I ever went to a testing event over in Jerez in Spain. It was back in 2008. And I went with my mate Jonathan, and it was phenomenal because you got in, I think it was like €7 to Jerez. and I think it was from about 2 miles away, we had in our hire car, and you know, we put down the window and we could see the sign for it all. There were lots of Ferraris that day that were also going to Jerez, and we thought they'd probably be going there. And the police were all over the place. But from 2 miles away, you could hear the engines, literally. It was like, I thought it was like a, you know, at the start, and then it just got louder and louder. So we managed to get right the way around to the back street at Jerez. And we took our video camera and stuff, and the first car who actually came round was Lewis Hamilton, and he was coming hearing down the street into the hairpin and round and along. So it was great fun, and anyway, it was such a good experience. And I think, you know, any Formula One event is exciting because they're maybe not quite as noisy as they were, but it's still quite a sound and quite a because everyone's cheering and excited. It's all quite fun. So I suppose, are you hoping that perhaps, you work obviously in a factory at the moment, is there a possibility that they could help you to go and see a race as well, allow to kind of maybe help to for your understanding as to how it all works, or is that something a different department?
I think it'll be a shift of career. The one I'm in at the moment is very much factory based, which is fantastic. The numbers of guys that go trackside nowadays is very small. We're caps, it's an FIA cap on numbers that are trackside. It's the same with Formula E, capped trackside. So you need to be within specific groups that go out trackside. But I wouldn't ever write stuff off. As I said to you before this started live, I do trackside stuff in terms of karting and in terms of lower Formula E's in tin top style. So it's definitely something that I have a huge interest in.
It looks amazing. I mean, I always think even just the colour schemes of all the different teams and they all wear this stuff. And it does look, even when they're all trackside or they're in the cars and you see them in the garages and all the stuff that's going on, and you've got the hospitality and everything like that. I mean, it is a circus, as they call it, really, isn't it? And but for you to be part of that, it's something very, very special. Now, one of our viewers has said, I've been in the wind tunnel because my hair is blowing off. it's an amazing, amazing thing. I remember when I went to the Blancpain race at Silverstone last year, and I met David Perrell there. I'd interviewed him just a few months before, and he said, "Oh, when you're coming down to I'm racing at Silverstone, make sure you come and see me." So I managed to get there, and actually that was another Renault trip that I won. I don't know how many. I must have won about 2 or 3 from Renault over the past few years. So I had a day with Renault. I was able to drive the new Megane RS that they had launched there, and that was great fun. And then I got all the hospitality and things like that. But it was just great to see the whole a proper event, because the Blancpain Championship is a huge event, and of course that's the one that they cover on Assetto Corsa, isn't it? Assetto Corsa competition is the big one. So what you're learning from that, they can see in the real life. And so there's a lot of sim drivers and sim racers that watch the show. Would you say that Assetto Corsa competition, and even just Assetto Corsa, it's probably worth buying if you want to seriously get into sim racing? I think it's probably a good place to start.
It's definitely, since the old Assetto Corsa, it's taken another level. It's now shot by every sim race enthusiast. It's now on a level with iRacing. It's got bits better. It's got bits not quite so refined, a bit like iRacing. But what the fantastic bit about Assetto Corsa is it's your one payment. So you pay for the game. Sim, and then you keep that, and obviously Assetto or Kunos, I think, develop it. They keep it up to date, so that's it's a worthwhile investment, especially since the world sort of came to a slower pace and everyone indoors, and the sim racing scene boomed. Assetto Corsa has shown what it's very good at, which is hosting obviously GT style sprint and endurance races, and it does them on a different level to all the other sims that I've used. I think it's a well worth investment, especially retail fully at like £60 maximum.
I bought a set of Corsa last year, and it was only about £20 on Amazon, so that was for the disc version for PS4 certainly. But I was amazed. But I know the new one I have, it's about to be launched on console next at the end of the month, actually. So I'm hoping to get that. I've got it for, well, I've just got the Centro Corsa for my PC, certainly. But yeah, I think that Centro Corsa competition is a wee bit more. But it's certainly very affordable. And I'm looking at getting that as well, because I think that would be quite fun. Whether it'll be console or PC, one of the two probably will definitely be getting delivered at some point. But it's amazing to see just the similarities and how close they are getting from, you know, racing on the simulator to then going to real life. Because obviously, you know, David Perrell, and when I interviewed him, he said now all he does is GT Sport and sim racing and a set of course as practice. He doesn't do go-karting anymore or that kind of thing. He almost recommends that people get themselves a really good sim setup because they can learn so much from that. Is that something that you would agree with? Do you think that's the same, or would you still think there's a good experience of having go-karting as well?
I think it all varies depending on what walk of life you come from and where you're aiming to go, really. The thing about go-karting is it builds, especially for anyone that's never driven anything in real life, it builds your muscles up for reacting to the forces that you get in a car. The sims, obviously, you don't get that. You get your arm muscles, especially from the force feedback that you can get nowadays. I think certainly rental karting's not quite, doesn't cut the mustard. It's got to be proper two-stroke karting is where the four-stroke twin engine ones, equally anything basically owner driver stuff, that builds up a very good skill set. But if you can't afford to throw thousands at karting, it's tens of thousands you need to be thrown to be competitive. Sim racing is now this new beast. I think if you've only ever sim raced, you can develop some interesting / bad habits that don't translate very well into real life. But ultimately, the whole concept definitely translates. Certainly before I went karting, I'd spent a couple of years sim racing, and it definitely helps give you an understanding, because the general, just from a driving point of view, braking zones are very similar, if not the same, especially if you're going around tracks. What now, they're laser scanning tracks. They're very, very, very similar to learn a track. You'll find differences, but they're good. So I definitely think sim racing, investing even in a cheap rig, is a well worth investment if that's the route you're looking to go.
Yeah. I always remember, like, on the old Formula One games, I could never quite figure it out how the guys were. I'd maybe be about, you know, 2.5 to 3 seconds off the top lap times, and I never could get any closer. And I used to think, how are they managing to cut all this time? And, you know, you'd be figuring anything, because I wasn't one for knowing how to set up the car at all. I would tend to take maybe a standard setup and maybe adjust it a little bit, but pretty much it was just a kind of standard thing. So obviously that's quite a big part to play in how good the settings are and how good your performance is. But when I used to watch the replays, because sometimes you could watch who did the fastest lap and how they did it, they would just change down gears. That in real life, if you did that, you would blow the engine, because it would, you know, it was like the rev limiter was going way up, and, you know, or it would lock. You would feel it kind of lock in the wheels. So I think that's one of the things I always thought in real life. The car probably wouldn't change down, because it would probably have a thing to protect itself. But they were able to do it on the sim. So, you know, but it was somehow giving them a little bit more grip as they went around the corner and did their braking and so on and whatever. But no, it's amazing the differences and how close it is to making it all work. But the sim scene as well, I mean, there's obviously the professionals like yourself and Josh who race on to win for these big prizes and things like that. But then you've got like GT Sport and the kind of fun, kind of crazy side of it all. Do you ever kind of tap into a little bit of that yourself, and when you get a spare minute, have a little go?
Yeah, no, my sim rig is unfortunately packed away at the moment, but when it was up and out, I was very much onto the you're just iRacing open lobbies. I was onto the older set of course, so I did like some Thursday League, just a fun one. It's a brilliant amount of fun, especially to fill the void on off seasons from karting or from just trying to get your fix for racing.
It's good fun.
It is good fun.
So what do you think the guys like, like Super GT and Jimmy Broadbent and people like, because they've obviously, Super GT hasn't been on the big Formula One events that have been covered on Sky and things like that. I feel he should do. He certainly deserves it. because he's up there good as well, more than good enough. We've kind of, Andrew and I have kind of complained at the lack of the coverage, but we thought was pretty shocking on some of the stuff. More on the fact that, you know, like when you compare it to like to a set of Corsa, and when you see those events done by like race department, you know, it's almost like watching the real thing. And to be fair, yeah, the BBC have done a good job with the Formula E sim racing as well, because that's almost, it looks very similar to the real thing. And they've got the same commentators and all of that. You know, all the team is pretty much the same. But in the Formula One, which you would expect it to do really well, it's shocking. I mean, they've got people who, their only interest is what shirt they're wearing, you know, or kind of, you know, it just doesn't, I don't know where they found them from, but they were like, you know, you expect really, you know, you want Brundle, you want Croft, you want all these, you know, people like, you know, Ted's Notebook, or, and they, you know, I know they can't at the moment put them there because of all this social distancing stuff, but it's kind of, it's really, I think people, certainly from my generation, are expecting an awful lot more. How do you think, I mean, I don't know if you've watched some of the virtual racing that's gone on, but what did you think of it?
It was lacking. It looked like a 2010-esque sim attempt. I think the people behind it, obviously, you've got now 8 F1 drivers entering into the latest Grand Prix, and that's not a problem. I think the biggest problem is it lacks in that sim enthusiasm, and I don't think the sim / game, I think F1 2019 that they're based on, is definitely bordering game than sim. It just doesn't lend itself to professionalism in terms of streams. I think that's where, especially Assetto Corsa competition, the new one, that has taken another level in terms of how it streams. I think the quality of the racing has been as good. If you look at some of the Leclerc and Albon,
that's been quite good at the head of the field. Yeah,
The racing's been good. It's just, it's the padding that goes around it that's been lacking. It's the pre-event chats, the post-event chat, and the way the game looks. I think it gives you a really bad perception of what it could be. If you added some fancier camera angles to it, it would come across better. But I also, it's not, the F1 cars just don't, especially in that type of game, don't lend themselves to the nature of racing that you get within the SRR series, the wheel-to-wheel stuff. Yes, you get the wheel-to-wheel racing, but ultimately it's single-seater. So it's pass cleanly, don't touch. Obviously, they've got, this is another thing, they've got the damage off.
Which is really bad. Because, I mean, that's the thing, they, you know, and they all crash. They all, you know, quite often there were some big shunts. I mean, the one we did a few weeks ago, which was the Heineken Challenge, and it was, they kept saying it was going to be 3-lap races, but they stopped after a lap, because I don't know if it bugged out or whatever, but, and then it went back to the studio for like another 15 minutes of chat. And there's only so much you can talk about when you're stuck there waiting for the game to work. It was quite funny, but it was borderline embarrassing, because you kind of thought, well, what, you know, we were trying to cover this because we do it on Podbean Live. So it's like a radio type show. And you know, what could we watch? Because we couldn't, so we were watching these people talking, when normally we can watch a race and at least have something to talk about. So we ended up talking about movies and just about anything else my co-host Andrew could come up with to try and keep it kind of going and keep it working. So hopefully that will improve. Because when we had the races, the Brazilian Grand Prix was the best one. That worked really well. But I'm hoping that now that, you know, all they would need is, you think they could put a sim rig in a studio and one of them could actually talk through how it works, or, you know, or what to get, or for people who are interested to say, this is how it works, and put the game on it. And then they could do a lap or show something that's a bit more interesting, you know, a bit more of a build-up. Because I just kind of felt it wasn't really up to much when you consider what other teams are doing and other series are doing. I mean, like, that was the other one. I saw the IndyCar version that Lando Norris was in a few weeks ago. And that one was incredible. I mean, they had the proper American commentators, and it was just like watching it for real. I mean, it was, they took it seriously and they did a fantastic job. But you can see that's probably how it's going to develop in the future. I think all the games will raise their game quite a bit, pardon the pun, but it will hopefully get a lot better and see how it goes. But do you think you'll do kind of, would you like to do more professional sim racing yourself as well? Is it something you would kind of fancy doing?
From the engineering side, yes. The driving side, I enjoy my racing, but there's something especially when I start looking at the data of some of these top drivers, they're just poles apart from what I can even achieve as just a sort of amateur sim racer. The consistency that Josh can get out of a run, like a couple of other drivers I've worked for in the past, save naming them. But I've worked for one chap, which I think I raced with and then engineered for a couple of endurance events. And he was just a monster when it came to putting laps out that not only were incredibly fast, but incredibly consistent over 24-hour races. So he'd be doing three-hour stints. There's especially in the sim racing, there's once they hone into their technique and get into their zone, they just the regular people have got to put some serious amount of hours in to get anywhere close to them. I enjoy my casual sort of MX5 iRacing series. Brilliant amount of fun.
Because that's what you start off with in iRacing, isn't it?
Yes, MX5, it is. Yeah,
things like that. Because quite a few people who have done, you know, quite a lot of YouTubers have tried iRacing, and it seems to kind of work. I think they get into it quite a bit, but I don't know if it kind of works well for YouTube or something for that, because I think it's harder for them. Maybe they in things like Gran Turismo, it's more because there's crashes, there's bumps, and it's the driving is probably worse, but to quite a big degree, in terms of, you know, the so many different drivers coming in. And iRacing, it's much more professional, isn't it? And if you bump, you can get disqualified quite quickly if you lose too many points and things. But the tracks do look great, and also you get a lot of tracks in iRacing and a set of Corsa that you just don't get in anywhere else, which I think is really good, because I didn't know. I'd only raced around, I'd heard of Mugello before, but I didn't realize at all what it was like. And when I had heard that it's actually an FIA race, or the, you know, it's got permission to be a Formula One registered or whatever, and then one of my friends was doing a lobby, so I thought, I'll go and have a go on that on a set of Corsa, and it was fantastic. It was really quite a good circuit to race on. I really enjoyed it. So it's great to get from someone who's not seen it, other than, you know, because it's not in Formula One, to then have a go on these tracks. And I also like Imola with the Alfa Romeo 155s that they have on a set of Corsa, the kind of touring cars from the kind of mid to late 90s. I could see you wondering what's one of those. shows my generation. But Andrew and I are big Alfa Romeo fans, so to be able to get into one, my father used to have one. He had the 2-litre twin spark version, so it was a great car, and I used to watch them race on the touring cars. They have great cars that you can get a hold of. And but you couldn't do that in any other game. You know, the Gran Turismo, the actual, well, they don't really have touring cars in it, to be fair. It's all the Group 4, Group 3, and Group 2, Group 1, and so on. But it's great to have that range. What would you, for someone who's maybe starting out as a sim racer, what would you kind of recommend as a good place to start overall?
I think the best place to start is with something that has, for example, iRacing, obviously I'd recommend the MX-5 and any fixed setup series. Then I would be recommending, outside of iRacing, on your Assetto Corsa competition, I'd be recommending one of the easier cars to drive. The Bentley seems to be fairly nice. I wouldn't be picking stuff like the Porsche or the Audi. So just picking a car, sticking with it, Assetto Corsa does some fantastic, although not brilliant, but fantastic preset setups that do work. When it comes to, like, I would want to, as a beginner, stick with a car and then learn how to drive, because the biggest thing that you find with new drivers is they instantly think that everything else is wrong and that they've done enough practice, and you can assure them that they haven't. You need to be within a tenth to, depending on the track length and depending on what car you're in, you need to be within a percentage lap time range before you even start fiddling with the setup, before you start sort of looking into the data. The thing is, if you're looking into the, with the new Assetto Corsa, I can see a lot of people diving straight into the data, not really knowing what they're looking at, and having a 2 second a lap variance around somewhere like Silverstone. And they're going to be like, oh, well, I can do this here, I can do that. It's like, firstly, go out there and find your braking markers, find your acceleration zones. And the most important thing is to practice and get laps in. is it, yeah. As long as the setup isn't undrivable, and that there are, to go against what I've just said, there are setups that are poor that will mean that beginner drivers will struggle with them. But as long as the setup's consistent, probably tapered toward understeering, so making sure that you've got a nice stiff front end and soft rear end. Making sure you've got plenty of rear end grip. So even if it's understeering badly, just so that they lap consistently. And then once they're lapping consistently, then they need to look at their actual lap pace. Is it a second away from sort of the best time they've ever seen? Is it 2 seconds away? You don't want to get too caught up in that, because especially with sims nowadays, there's so much variance within weather, within temperature on the tracks, within surface conditions that are simulated, that you might see this godlike lap on YouTube that's 2 seconds faster than yours. And in reality, what they've done is sat there for a while, honing the setup to the track conditions. It's like, no, as long as you're consistently lapping, that is the best thing, best recommendation for anyone starting.
Yeah, no, that's really good to know, because I know that from like the Coach Dave Academy, they're selling setups as well, aren't they? So you can buy a special setup for, I suppose, for a set of Corsa and things like that, so you can be a lot more competitive. And it's certainly, I was like, one of my other co-hosts, we always said to him, because he plays a lot of GT Sport with me, but struggles to get kind of really good lap times. I mean, I'm not saying I'm that good, but I'm probably 1.5 to 2 seconds off the top times. But, you know, so kind of gradually getting a wee bit closer. But for someone who's never really done it before and then comes in and has a go, it would be amazing to get that Coach Dave Academy training with David Perrell and see what he's like. Because even in an hour or two, you could probably shave off a couple of seconds at least on your lap time. If you know, and it's great. So do you think you would do more or things like that in the future? Or what would be your plans or things you would like to do in sim racing and things like that?
Certainly in sim racing, it's definitely my plans are to keep building up the knowledge as everything keeps evolving. Now that we've got data, we have had iRacing data getting into MoTeC for a while, but with such a more mainstream and easily accessible sim with Assetto Corsa, the data's helped mean that from an engineering point of view, you can exploit, because the games always have their bugs or ways that you can get the setups to work much better. So it's definitely gonna be sitting down that. And then the other bit I love doing is the strategy live that you watch me do with Josh.
Yeah, which is great.
Telling him to or not to overtake drivers. Try not to find the spun around Porsche in front
of us. Oh, I couldn't believe it, because he was up to like 24th up to 16th. And doing so well, and then that silly guy had just spun off and came on the track at the wrong point, and it was quite a thing. And the funny thing was, I'd seen a clip that he'd put on Twitter for the week before, which was when it was at Spa, and I didn't realize that he was in that car. I thought it was somebody else's car, and of course they came up, and then the people in front had braked, and then he was touched, and he went into somebody else and all the rest of it. So of course I said it wasn't so much his fault. I said it was a racing incident. But when I looked at it, realizing it was his car, it was pretty much quite clear that other people had braked too hard, or just not, and then one person braked at all, just about, and caused that kind of accident. So it's amazing the detail that you can go into, and the kind of the drive of the first few corners, I think, in any sim race seems to be life or death with all of that. But that's what makes it really quite good. And as it gets better, it gets more exciting. As well for people to watch, and also with my friend Andrew was saying, when we watched the pro race for the Formula One, they were much better. They didn't cut the corners as much, but they were still getting really good times, and also they didn't bump as much as well. They were all much more kind of focused and very professional. While in the main race, it was as they were damage off, they could just take each other out when they felt was necessary. You know, it was a bit more argy bargy, but certainly, I mean, it's interesting the way it goes. One of the questions we got asked, I'll have to try and do this in a general manner. When a team potentially loses a driver, how does that affect the team? I mean, do you find that you, even though maybe you haven't met them or that close to them, but does it affect you a little bit in with the team's momentum?
I mean, you obviously, when you get big name signings, it's a morale boost internally when you get stuff like that. I can't comment for Trackside, but certainly for factory based, it makes a little bit of a difference. You want to know that you've got drivers that personally you feel are capable, but whether you're a good determining factor of whether they're capable or not is a different thing. Obviously, if you've got Kimi signed for the team, then that's a big morale boost in the sense that he's a liked driver. You were to get someone that was a bit more unknown, it might make limited difference. But it's certainly the chatter goes on within the team. Because ultimately, you as a team want to win. If you think you've just signed or lost a driver that is going to help you towards wins, then it's going to make a big difference. But I think it's certainly, you pay attention to it. It all depends. Everyone's personalities are different as well. So some people aren't too phased, other people are quite caught up in it.
Yeah. Obviously, as you work in Formula One, have you ever had a chance to actually meet the drivers? Because you're factory based, have they ever turned up when you've been there and you get a chance to say hello and things like that?
Yeah, you do. They not very often, obviously, and it all depends what departments you're working in. If you're working in a department that's involved with drivers, then you're going to see them more often. Although you've got to remember these drivers for 20, 21, 22 rounds a year out trackside. During the winter, they're training. They come. I've met both of our current lineup a couple of times. I met the previous one once, and they're all prepared to sit and stop and have a chat with you as if you're just anyone new to them. They don't typically introduce themselves. I think there is a little bit of assumed knowledge, but they will have a nice enough conversation with you.
If you end up talking to them and say, "So who are you?" and so you have to say, "Well, sorry, I'm not wearing my glasses." You know, it was like, so now I can recognise you. You know, it must be amazing actually. And of course, you might just get that odd bit when you're driving into the factory and you see a well-known face and you think, "What are they doing here?" And then you think that could be the next kind of breaking news story coming in as you know, talks arise. And you see what was happening. I had my one kind of claim to fame. Well, it was two, to be fair. Years ago, when David Coulthard drove for McLaren, I was a kind of, at the time there was a kind of Team McLaren kind of fan group that was run by McLaren, and they would invite you to different things. And because I lived in Edinburgh, they had managed to get a stand at, I think it was like the Scottish Sports Car Show. But it hadn't really been advertised that well, and it was a real flop in terms of the turnout was really bad. So I remember going along because I had my, it said, if you come along and show your McLaren T-shirt, your team fan T-shirt, they would come along and you might get some, you know, there might be some special guests. And I thought, oh, that could be interesting, because they said you'll get a signature, you know, you can get a bits and pieces and they'll give you a free bit of whatever it was. And so I ended up going there, and there was nobody there. Everyone was outside because there was some stuff going around Ingolston. So people were getting kind of track drives and things like that. So I thought I'd go into the trade stand because that's where they said that McLaren was. So I wandered in, and it's like a kind of, you know, it's completely empty. There's a few people on the stands, but that's about it. And I walk along the corridor in between the stands, and I see the McLaren sign. So I thought, I'm aiming for that. And who comes round the corner but David Coulthard? And he's so bored because there's nobody there. And I went, hello. And he recognised my McLaren kind of T-shirt, and he said, "Oh, you must be here for, you know, for the thing." And he just talked to me, and I was like, "All right." And I was only like 20 odd, and of course, at this time he was driving for McLaren, and this must have been about 90, was it 90? Yeah, 97, 98 thereabouts. And he just talked to me, and I thought, I'm only a fan, you know. I think he realised that after a while, I wasn't one of the members of the team, you know. I was just some guy that turned up with a McLaren team fan, but I was eagerly listening, and I was talking to him and asking him questions. But I ended up talking to him for about 20 minutes just because there was nobody else there. And I remember saying, what was it like to drive, obviously, for McLaren and before that for Williams, because he had filled in for Williams. But it was amazing that can happen. But even bigger one was, back in, I think it was 91 or 90, 91, 92, I think it was, Ayrton Senna actually visited my hometown of Duns because it was kept quiet because he was a big fan of Jim Clark. And so he came to get his picture taken and to see the room and to see all the trophies and things. And it was a very dull and dour winter's day. And right opposite the park, opposite the museum, is Dunn's Library. And I was there returning a book with my father. And so he'd parked the car, and I'd gone out to return this book. And we saw this car then come up with a few other cars with it. And this chap got out wearing these dark glasses and a cap. But I didn't see that it was a National cap. And I thought, who on earth is this coming to Dunn's? You know, with these dark glasses on a day that was as dull and dour, as they say in Scotland, as it could be, you know. And of course, I never looked further, and I didn't really recognise him. And then it wasn't until a few days later that in the Berkshire News, on the front page is Ayrton Senna in the Jim Clark room. And I go, I recognise that was him. And I was only about maybe 60 metres across the road from where he was, you know. And if I'd known that at the time, I would have ran across him. Oh, fine, you know, give me a signature. And it costed him. But yeah, no, it was quite a thing. But I think Formula One just has that incredible, it's more than celebrity. It's a kind of sporting prowess that whenever you get a chance to meet one of them, it is quite something. Who would you say, what's the biggest name that you've met? Bearing in mind that you don't have to mention them, your current ones, but or you can name them whatever you like.
I think it's going to be Ricciardo. He's probably the biggest one I've met. I came close to Lewis, but never spoken to him. Ricciardo is definitely there. Probably my personal favourite, just because he is as he is on the camera. He's quite
funny. Yeah, yeah.
I think I've met a lot of non F1 drivers, but yeah, in terms of F1, the ones I've met, he's probably the one I remember most from meeting.
Yeah. It's funny because sometimes you meet the old ones. I've seen like Jean Alesi, and I was a huge Ferrari fan in the 90s. Yeah. And of course, we drove for Ferrari, and he did some great runs, and it was good fun to see him racing. And obviously David Coulthard and one or two others. But no, it's an amazing thing to be around, and for you to be doing that at such a young age must be kind of just for you. You know, it's great because we watch them on a Sunday, and you get to work around that whole kind of event and series, which is fantastic. Well, I really appreciate you putting time aside tonight. I'm sure our viewers and our listeners will really appreciate what you've been doing and the event that you're in. Is there anything you would like to advertise so that we can watch you in future? Obviously, I know you do the SRO events, but are there other things or things you would, you know, that you can publicize? Feel free, it's an advert for you to say what you like.
I think you'll have to keep an eye on Josh Martin's Twitch, TM_Martin, that'll have all the upcoming events on it, mainly for the near future. It's going to be a Assetto Corsa competition. So that's the one to keep an eye on, really. Other than that, hopefully, we've got some Formula One races coming up soon.
Yes, exactly. That's going to be amazing in Austria. And they just announced the first 8 races, wasn't it? So 2 in Austria and then 1 in Hungary in between the 2 British Grand Prix coming up as well, isn't it? So that's going to be really good. And then I think they go off to, is it Spain and Italy and Spa, isn't it? Yeah, so it's going to be, it's going to be quite interesting how they've all worked out. And then we'll see what happens later on in the year. I always remember my brother gave me a text message I was working on that one day I ever had to work on a Sunday afternoon, and it was the Singapore Grand Prix. And it was from about 3 years ago, when, of course, it was that wet race. And, you know, Vettel crashed into Verstappen and Alonso and the whole thing. And he said, oh, I just happened to be, he was there on business. And he said, oh, they put me in a hotel. And there appears to be a race on outside. And he took a picture from his hotel room. And it was right over the track. And I said, you bugger. You know, I was like, you know, I mean, love, it's the one race I'd love to go to. How did you manage that? And he said, oh, I might go and watch it if I can be bothered. And I said, you need to get out there and get some pictures and get some video footage for me. But you know, it's spectacular, really, isn't it? So it's an amazing business to be around and to meet all these kind of people. So no, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Thank you very much indeed.
It's been a pleasure.
Stay on the line, but I'll say goodbye to all our viewers and our listeners for the podcast. But so all our viewers and listeners, you've been watching the Car Sim and Race Driver Show with me, Hugh Hattrick, but far more importantly, my very special guest, the first one we've ever had from Formula One, Will Daniels.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
And we have our kind of motto on the car sim and race driver show. It is drive fast and try not to crash. I'll see you all next week, and bye just now.